program to assassinate Fidel Castro. And I just got through telling you that Lee Harvey Oswald was, according to this new witness, Judith Baker, involved with the CIA's program to assassinate Castro. That's a direct connection between the two assassinations. Both are linked to the CIA's plots to take the life of Fidel Castro. A number of strange things are done by Cooper early on. First of all, he announces ready for trial within a month. Before I talk about Cooper, let me tell you something else about Wieran. Because Wieran is the guy who came up with Cooper's name, right? So does he do anything that's very strange? Yes, he does. In this January 6th, all-important in-chambers conference that's transcribed by the court reporter, that's part of the record, I have the transcript, there's a discussion in which Wieran goes on the record as saying he's talked to Sirhan and advised him that there's nothing wrong with Sirhan's continuing to be represented by Cooper. Now, the issue being discussed is the way in which Sirhan's reputation could be adversely affected in the eyes of the jury by the adverse publicity being directed at Cooper over the transcripts. But there's nothing on the record that indicates that any discussion took place in which Sirhan was advised, hey, look, it's dangerous for you to be represented by a lawyer who could be indicted by a co-prosecuting agency in this case, the U.S. Attorney's Office, which was a member of the task force in the case. The case was brought by the L.A. County DA's office. The LAPD was the major investigative agency, but the FBI was conducting a parallel investigation, and the FBI's prosecuting agency, the U.S. Attorney's Office, was a co-participant in this interagency task force. So what is an ACLU lawyer advising somebody to go ahead and be represented by a lawyer who could be indicted by one of the prosecuting agencies in this case? I mean, what kind of advice is that? Certainly he knows better. He certainly knows that that's not competent advice. Now, it's not on the record that the ACLU lawyer gives the advice to Sirhan to go ahead and accept Cooper, despite the danger of being sold out by a lawyer who's being pressured. There's no discussion of the issue of pressure on the record. We have that from Sirhan in a declaration that I filed with the court that Wieran never warned him about the danger of being represented by a lawyer who's being pressured or subject to pressure from the prosecution. I think it's absolutely incredible, and it taints Wieran in my judgment. I know that the ACLU has been infiltrated by the FBI. A number of ACLU personnel and lawyers turned out to have been government informants who contacted Hoover and ratted on their own clients. That's not to say that Wieran was, but his behavior is extremely suspicious. And in order for this assassination cover-up to work, there has to be some means to bring Sirhan together with one of these lawyers who's holding a Rosselli-furnished stolen grand jury transcript. And the person who does that is volunteer attorney A.L. Wieran, who pops up at the jail and begins hyping Cooper as an ideal person for Sirhan to hire. So there's something very suspicious about the role of A.L. Wieran in this situation, in my judgment. All right, let's then discuss straight ahead the subject of Grant Cooper's conduct. As I said, he announces that he's ready for trial after only 30 days trial preparation. That's extremely strange in any case. It's doubly strange in a murder case. It's triply strange in a capital murder case. Your client's neck is on the line, he could be killed, and you're ready for trial in 30 days before you know anything about it. Preposterous. But if he's there dancing to the tune of the prosecution, which is what we're going to see is going on, then that makes all the sense in the world that he does this. Now, not only that, he announces ready for trial without having seen the autopsy report in a murder case. Very strange in any murder case, because the cause of death is an issue. But doubly strange in a capital murder case. At that time, under California law, if your client is not the person who shot and killed the victim, your client was not eligible for the death penalty. So the autopsy report proved that there was a reasonable doubt as to whether your client shot the victim or proved that somebody else did it. You certainly would want that document in your hands. You wouldn't want to start your trial without seeing that document, because that document would enable you to save your client's life by proving, well, whatever he was part of, he wasn't the person who shot the victim, and therefore he's not even eligible for the death penalty. You wouldn't want to start that trial without that document. But he went plowing right ahead. Not only that, he got up in front of the jury during the course of voir dire, that's jury selection. And then in his opening statement, on two occasions, he made the following concession. Ladies and gentlemen, Sirhan Sirhan killed Robert Kennedy. The only issue you will be asked to decide is a state of mind. He was conceding, without having any documentary basis for it, that his client was the killer, and the document, in fact, confirms otherwise. I'll explain that right now. The autopsy report confirms that Robert Kennedy was shot from the back. That's important because all the witnesses were going to say, and all the witness reports stated, that Robert Kennedy was standing face-to-face with Sirhan in front of Robert Kennedy, firing towards Kennedy's front, not back. Wrong side of the body. A clear basis for saving your client's life. You certainly would want to bring that out. The second problem with the prosecution's theory, the second devastating impact of the autopsy report, is that the autopsy report confirms that the distance between the assailant's weapon, whoever the assailant was, and Robert Kennedy's body was somewhere between actual physical contact and no more than 2 or 3 inches away. That's important because the witness reports say, and the witnesses are going to testify, that the distance between Sirhan's gun and Robert Kennedy's body is somewhere between, on average, 3 feet, somewhere between 1.5 feet and 5 feet away. But the average distance is 3 feet. Nobody puts the weapon anything like as close as would be required for Sirhan to have fired the shots that are described in the autopsy report. And they know the muzzle distance of the shots that hit Kennedy because of tattooing that was found on Kennedy's body. And they test-fired a weapon similar to the so-called Sirhan revolver, and they found that weapon would produce such tattooing marks at certain distances, nothing like 1.5 feet or 3 feet or 5 feet, more like contact to 1 or 2 inches away, 3 inches maximum. So that exonerates Sirhan. Also, the angle of entry of the bullets that hit Robert Kennedy was at a sharp upward angle. Remember, from the rear. That's important because all witnesses describe Sirhan as holding his revolver in a horizontal direction, in a horizontal position. So wrong angle, wrong distance, wrong position. Sirhan is not the killer. The death penalty shouldn't even be an issue in this case. Grant Cooper should be hopping up and down, screaming at the jury, "My client is not even eligible. He's not the one." And there was a report in Cooper's possession that was made available of an interview conducted by the police with a security guard named Thane Eugene Caesar, an ideal subject, an ideal suspect in the case. Because Caesar, unlike Sirhan, was directly behind Sirhan, or directly behind Robert Kennedy. He pulled his revolver, according to his own statement, right after the shooting fired and dropped to the ground, or dropped to the ground first and then pulled his revolver. Now that puts him in position to fire these front to back, or rather back to front, sharp upward angle shots at such a close range that he could have been responsible for the powder tattooing. He says he was in direct physical contact with Kennedy. He led him into the room when Kennedy turned to his left to shake the hands of a busboy. Caesar admits that he grabbed Kennedy's arm and pulled it back toward the center of Robert Kennedy's body. And then the senator began to move forward, and that's where the shooting began. So Caesar acknowledged having been in direct physical contact at the rear and having dropped to the ground. He and he alone, as opposed to Sirhan, was in position to fire these sharp upward angle contact or virtually contact shots from the rear. Sirhan wasn't. Any defense attorney who wanted to save his client's life would have brought that out because he would have argued, look, somebody else did it. And Caesar was an ideal candidate as a suspect because he was a supporter of George Wallace, the racist candidate for the American Independent Party, a virulent Kennedy hater, and also he was in possession of a .22 caliber revolver, the same caliber as used in the assassination. But that revolver, he said, falsely, had been sold by him, Caesar, after the assassination. The receipt confirms that it was sold. He said the revolver was sold before the assassination. It wasn't. The receipt shows that it was sold after the assassination. So Caesar was in position and in range. He's got a motive to go after Kennedy. He works at Lockheed, a weapons contractor, which was going to make billions of dollars from a continuation of the war in Vietnam that Robert Kennedy promised to stop if elected. And he gives a false account of his weapon. He's got the right kind of weapon at the time to do this damage. All of this is evidence that could have been presented or that should have been presented in Sirhan's behalf in his trial. But compromised defense attorney Grant Cooper was much more interested in saving his rear end from an indictment by the U.S. Attorney's Office than he was in representing his client. That's why the trial did not result in any of these facts coming out. So that's a key to why the trial took the course that it did. Now, there are some other very strange things about this case. With such a big deal being made of Sirhan's mental state, it's important to understand what that mental state really was. The defense introduced expert testimony from a psychiatrist who claimed that Sirhan was a paranoid schizophrenic and that he went into an altered state as a result of lights and mirrors, and that's why he lost control of himself and killed Robert Kennedy. Well, it happens that paranoid schizophrenics, or schizophrenics in general, have a very low level of hypnotizability. And that's important because Sirhan had a very high level of hypnotizability. So the defense that was put on was a false, fraudulent defense. The jury rejected it, walked Sirhan straight into the gas chamber. Remember, they thought that Sirhan was the person who shot Robert Kennedy. Now, why am I talking about hypnosis? When Sirhan was first examined by Dr. Bernard Diamond of the defense in his cell, it very quickly emerged that Sirhan had been hypnotized before the assassination. He was an experienced subject. Dr. Diamond walked up and held a quarter out in front of Sirhan's face, and Sirhan instantly went into a trance. Remarkable. Dr. Diamond realized that Sirhan was an excellent and experienced hypnotic subject, that he had been hypnotized before the assassination. And then he decided to see to what extent Sirhan could be manipulated through hypnosis to perform acts that he wouldn't ordinarily perform. So he said to Sirhan, when Sirhan was still in trance, "Sirhan, when you wake up," that's the inexact terminology that was used, "I'm going to touch my forehead, and when you see this signal, you're going to climb the bars of your cell like a monkey." So he, quote, woke him up, and then he touched his forehead. And Sirhan went right up the bars of his cell and hung from the top of his cell like a monkey and looked down and gave monkey-like expressions to the doctor. And Dr. Diamond said, "Sirhan, who told you to do that?" And Sirhan said, "No one. I'm doing it on my own. I want to look out the window." So here we have a virtual blueprint of the way the assassination was carried out. We have somebody who is manipulated through hypnosis to walk in and fire a gun with no knowledge that he's acting in response to hypnotic programming, who denies that he's been hypnotized. And Sirhan repeatedly denied to Dr. Diamond that he was acting in response to a hypnotic command. There are other signs of this. The prosecution repeatedly mentioned a notebook that was found in Sirhan's room containing one particular page with repeat incantations of the phrase, "RFK must be assassinated, RFK must be assassinated, Robert F. Kennedy must be assassinated," in this trance-like repetition. Well, the defense should be jumping up and down about that. The defense is not talking about it at all. The prosecution is talking about it, and the defense is making nothing of it. Another example of a compromised, rigged defense. And it's important what the defense had as a way of answering this document that was used by the prosecution to buttress its claim that Sirhan was planning the assassination and was using writing to try to program himself into committing it. Because under hypnosis, Sirhan was asked, "Sirhan, tell us something else about Robert Kennedy." And he wrote out the phrase, "RFK must die, 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 RFK must die." The same pattern of writing. in his cell under hypnosis as appeared in his room before the assassination, leading to the obvious conclusion that the pre-assassination writing in his room was also the product of hypnosis. If somebody hypnotized him to do this writing, somebody hypnotized him to walk in and fire with no memory and knowledge of what he was doing. Sirhan described having met a girl, as he calls her, at a coffee urn in the Ambassador Hotel. And he engaged in a conversation in which she said, "Could you pour me a cup of coffee with a lot of cream and a lot of sugar?" He then describes himself as having blacked out. The next thing he remembers, he's being choked on the steam table in the pantry with a gun in his hand. Was she giving him some sort of signal that would cause him to black out and carry out a programmed scenario? At another point in his questioning before trial, he said, "Yes, she led me into a dark place." So he's describing her as having led him into the pantry. He's not saying he followed because, you know, he wanted to. He's saying she led him in. She's describing a situation in which she's basically in command of his conduct. The other thing that's very interesting, so that would seem to point to the idea of Sirhan as a kind of Manchurian candidate who's being controlled by hypnotic programming and who's acting in response to commands, just as he was in his cell when the doctor said, "When I touch my forehead, that was the signal then, you're going to climb the bars of your cell like a monkey." The signal prior to the assassination appeared to be Sirhan, not Sirhan, but pour me a cup of coffee with a lot of cream and a lot of sugar. At trial, interestingly enough, he was asked, "Sirhan, did you shoot Robert Kennedy?" Now, if he was aware of what he was doing, he would have said yes, but I did it for the following reason, or it was the wrong thing to do, or something like that. But he said, "I don't recall. I'm told I did. I must have." So he submits to the idea that he did, but he had no memory of having done it. And that's not a painless thing for him to say, because he was in effect acknowledging that he was not in command of his faculties, not something that he wanted to do. There was a stigma attached to that in Middle East culture. In fact, defendants in criminal cases frequently are observed to be more than willing, you know, they were more willing to go to the gas chamber than to acknowledge that they're not of their right mind because of the stigma attached to that. So that's also interesting. Now, the prosecution claimed that Sirhan programmed himself through hypnosis and reinforced his own willingness to do it by this repeat writing. But if that's what you're doing, then you would have a memory, and Sirhan had no memory. And to show you that his amnesia was genuine and not faked, let me recount for you the fact that under hypnosis, Sirhan was unable to even reenact the assassination. The doctors said to him when he was in trance, "Sirhan, here comes Robert Kennedy. The bombs are falling. Reach for the gun. Reach for the gun, Sirhan." And he reaches for his crotch. They can't get him to reach for the gun. It's indisputable that he reached for a gun. Everybody knows he reached for a gun. He doesn't. He's told that he did. But everybody else knows he did. But they couldn't break past what was apparently a hypnotically induced blocking mechanism. Another example of this was, "Sirhan, was there someone with you?" "No." Then the question is repeated, and he says, "Yes, a girl." "The girl, the girl, the girl." "What was his name? What was her name?" The question was, under hypnosis. He groans and shuts down. Apparently a blocking mechanism prevented him from answering that question. It's as though he had been advised, "You will not be able to recall this information." There are two other indications of this. And by the way, all of this is material that should have been presented on Sirhan's behalf to support the idea that he had been manipulated through hypnosis to walk in as a clay pigeon and fire with no knowledge of what he was doing, because that's in fact what has taken place. And there are two other indications of this, and they're very powerful. One is, right after the assassination, Sirhan had a discussion with a doctor at county jail. And in the course of this discussion, it quickly becomes apparent that Sirhan is shivering. And the doctor comments on this, and he asks him, "Why are you shivering? Are you cold?" And Sirhan says defensively, "No comment." Well, the sugaring is interesting because after he came out of trance induced in his cell before trial, Sirhan would always experience shivering. He would always be cold then. A clear indication that Sirhan was coming out of a trance state right after the assassination, and that he was in a hypnotically induced trance inside the pantry when he pulled a gun and fired in the presence of Robert Kennedy. So he was programmed. There's another indication of this. Sirhan didn't drink. He was like a teetotaler. And that's important because the prosecution claimed, the evidence showed, that Sirhan had ordered 4 Tom Collins drinks before the assassination. This was, in fact, one of the things that his attorney did use to try to prove that he suffered from what is called diminished capacity. He was drunk. Well, but the problem is that Sirhan didn't drink. So why is he drinking? Why is he boozing it up? Well, the answer is that according to my expert, the leading expert of the country on hypnosis, Dr. Herbert Spiegel of Columbia University, taking alcohol in the trance state deepens the amnesia flowing from the trance experience. So it makes it much more difficult to recover your memory even through hypnosis after the fact. The people who were manipulating Sirhan would have known that. They got him to drink alcohol so that any attempts to assist him in recovering his memory would flounder on the shoals of a deepened amnesia that was reinforced by the ingestion of alcohol. And that would explain his use of alcohol. So all of these facts point toward a Manchurian candidate defense that was never presented. Here's another one. The prosecution points with great enthusiasm to the fact that on the day of the assassination, Sirhan went to the San Gabriel Valley Gun Club and fired his weapon. They claimed for target practicing to prepare for the assassination. Well, but there's something very strange about that. The sign-in sheet at the San Gabriel Valley Gun Club reflects that 5 names above Sirhan's name, there appears LAPD Officer Lee. Isn't that a rather strange thing to do, to dry run a political assassination in front of a cop? Because aren't you planning to say, I didn't know what I was doing, I had no knowledge of what I was doing? There you are dry running, which shows premeditation. Why are you going to do this in front of a cop? Why don't you go out to the desert and do it on your own? But he's going to do it in front of LAPD Officer Lee. That means he doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't realize he's dry running an assassination. He's out there plunking away, having a good time. Remember, that's what he thought he was doing when he climbed the bars of his cell like a monkey, having a good time. He didn't know he was following a hypnotic command. And it's even better than that, because on June 1st, that's the Saturday before the assassination. The assassination took place on the 5th, following Election Day, the 4th. On the 1st, Saturday, Sirhan goes out to the gun range operated by, of all things, if you can believe this, that's right, the Corona Police Department. There he is in front of a bunch of cops, dry running again. But it's even better, because there's a document from the Corona Police Department gun range that shows that Sirhan was followed into the gun range by somebody with a Sirhan-like face but a much larger body. That somebody signed Sirhan's name onto the roster. So he had a handler. He was set up. He was a clay pigeon. He's innocent. Remember Oswald's comment in the basement of the police station? I'm just a patsy. That's what Sirhan was, a patsy. This document that I've described to you was never turned over to the defense. So the defense never even had a chance to talk about it, even assuming they wanted to. It's significant because the witness who saw the Sirhan-like person who signed Sirhan's name on the roster and who wouldn't back away from that was the rangemaster, who was a Corona police officer himself. This is a very dangerous witness from the prosecution standpoint, because this is somebody that's difficult for them to charge with lying to support a conspiracy theory. He's a cop. So they deep-six the report, they bury the report. The report never sees the light of day. I recently discovered this in the State Archives collection. And that's one of the documents that is before the California Supreme Court in my second petition, which was denied. And now all of this is going to be in litigation in district court in Los Angeles. So you have an overview of the kind of defense that could have been mounted for Sirhan. Well, it wasn't, of course, because the defense attorney had some other agenda, saving himself. Now, you can see the outlines of this plot. A hypno-programmed fall guy to take the rap. A show trial, which looks like a full exposition of the facts, but which is really a cover-up. And with a hypno-programmed assassin, you have somebody who really can't be trusted to carry out the act. He's drunk. He's under hypnosis. That means they have to get somebody else to actually do it. And I've already explained that that's exactly what they did. The shooting was carried out by somebody else from a different position, at a different angle, at a different distance. They were not going to trust somebody under hypnosis who was drunk with the act of doing in Robert Kennedy. Sirhan's job in this scenario was simply to get arrested and be blamed and be unable to explain his own conduct and be represented by a lawyer who was being blackmailed by the government into not defending him. The act of assassinating Robert Kennedy was going to be performed by one or more other people. Now, if that's the case, there should be telltale signs on the crime scene that multiple guns were used. Is there that evidence? You bet. And the prosecution covered it up deliberately. Sirhan's revolver held 8 shots, the so-called Sirhan revolver, which I don't believe is actually his revolver. But that weapon held 8 shots, according to the prosecution. According to the police, 7 bullets were found in victims. An 8th bullet was lost on the ceiling. So if there was any evidence of extra bullets on the crime scene, that would show multiple guns were in use. That would show a conspiracy. That would tend to support Sirhan's innocence as the shooter. It would at least be useful in getting him out of the death penalty. It would also support a Manchurian candidate theory of...